September 18th, 2014 meeting of the Citizens Involvement Committee. Did you get it, Nate?
Nothing yet.
Okay. If you guys would review the minutes.
Reviewed online. Recommend approval.
I make a motion to approve.
Any discussion on the minutes from last time?
Do you guys want to
talk? Hearing none, I move we approve the minutes.
All right. So moved.
All right, so moved.
We'll move on to the technical progress report, which I guess I'll fill you guys in. Nate is here tonight. Actually, do all of you know who is in attendance from AMAS?
No, I'd like to have their technical representation, please.
Okay. I am Heather Davis Riddle with AMAS.
And you do what?
All kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff. All right.
I'm Seth Bush. I'm GIS coordinator.
GIS, got it. Geographical Information Systems for the uninitiated.
Yeah.
Which is not me.
Staff planner. I work mostly with transit, but do a lot of oddball tasks too, statistical things, plan writing and stuff.
David Pillay. I'm an engineer. I play with crashes and I help Victor with the TIP and just whatever really needs done.
Victor Bozan with MS too. I work on the TIP.
Eugene Pizzolf, I work with traffic counting.
Could you go ahead as well?
Oh, all right.
I'm Rick Stocker. I live in Firestone Park.
Yeah, you don't have to tell us
about
it.
Dustin Baker. Major William Mackey, Air Force retired. I'm still a federal officer. Watch what you say.
Okay.
I was a former staff sergeant in the United States.
Oh, yeah? Very good. So new military.
Thrown out military, yeah.
All right. Thank you for that. So anyways, wanted to give you guys an update. Nate has worked on a draft of mid-block crossings. He's basically analyzed the several areas, I guess, within Summit and Portage County to come up with some recommendations for where mid-block crossings would be appropriate. He just has a draft, and I think that's coming out next week, and potentially you all will see it in December.
Yeah, we finished it up. It's kind of being reviewed around the office for just basic things, high-level stuff. The next meeting is in December is when it will start making its rounds. We can get a nice draft out there for everybody to look at and stuff. But yeah, just kind of looking in our area see places where mid-block crossings might be justified. So.
Which there's an awful lot of crossing outside of crosswalks as it is, so that'd be helpful. Also, we have our annual meeting coming up October 17th. Starts at 8:30. We're going to have two speakers come in. We're going to have Peter Kageyama, who wrote...
For the Love of Cities.
Thank you. I had it written down. For the Love of Cities. And then David Giffels, who wrote A Hard Way on Purpose.
What's the name of it?
A Hard Way on Purpose. So we'll have two speakers, and hopefully you guys can join us. It takes place at the Sheridan like we've done for several years now, and it has great food. We've also been working on a Better Block project. We're looking to do this at some point, a Saturday in September. October. Thank you, Seth. I did that. This is the second time today I did that. A Saturday in October, and the purpose of the Better Block, if any of you came to our Switching Gears conference, Jason Roberts spoke about the Better Block, that's where he's from. And the idea about a Better Block is that it's a demonstration tool to show what a block could be by bringing in different landscaping, using some vacant buildings, bringing in different businesses, planning an event around it, and kind of promoting temporarily and showing what could this space look like if we invested in it. And the hope is that it brings a lot of people together to work on it and also gets people excited to do something in their neighborhood. So we're hoping to do that some Saturday in October. We haven't nailed it down, but the location right now is North Main Street between Francis Avenue and Cuyahoga Falls Avenue. It's North Hills Temple Square, so if you know where the office is and North Akron Savings Bank, that's the area. So that we're working on that now. And also, if you guys are aware of the Highway Trust Fund, not sure if you're concerned about it or if we've talked about it.
Yeah, that was one of my questions from your PAC meeting. Where do we stand? Since
there is a temporary patch currently. They just past that. That will hold us through the spring, I believe, and it's just basically borrowing from the general fund. That's it. So we still haven't made a decision, still haven't worked together on a long-term solution, just that short-term solution.
I think it takes us through May, right?
Is it May?
Yeah, so it's not, I think in the past it was like a month extension, 2 months, but
right.
This is a little bit longer, give you some breathing room, some spring, whether they do something before then or not. If.
I have another question for your technical partner.
Okay.
PCR versus PCI data?
Yes, that's probably a Victor thing.
The difference?
No. It looks like the state wants to do some PCR data.
Yep. Well, the state always did it.
Right.
What happened was, so about a year and a half ago, they told us they're going to quit doing it.
I remember that.
Okay, so then our own area, we want to make a regional PCR data collection.
We're going to go out and get some machine or something or pay somebody to come do the data.
Right. We're going to hire somebody to come in and do it for us to give us more detailed information what ODOT provides.
Right.
So we started that process, and what happened was ODOT came in and said, hey, we need to still do this. So they said they're going to keep doing collecting the PCR data as they have in the past. So they were doing it every 2 years, so in effect, nothing changed. Nothing happened because they did it 2 years ago, and they're going to do it again. They're doing it right now. So part of the thing was we were going to help the locals pay for this, but there's a lot less interest in it now. The county headed this up, some county engineer's office, and they sent out a letter. And then once they found out that ODOT was going to do it again for at no cost to them, I don't think there's much interest in it anymore. Some people
it's the same roads we're talking about.
It's the same roads, but they will. The PCI, Pavement Condition Index, is a more detailed number, and you get software with it, and then the communities could kind of do what-if scenarios that if we spend this much money, we bring our average PCI down by such and such over the next 2 years. So you can do more with it, but for our purposes, we didn't need something that detailed, but we were going to help out locals by paying it,
since the locals are going to get PCR data anyway,
right.
They don't want to spend the extra money.
Yes, and some of them even, they don't have anything other than some guy goes out and drives around and says, this road's bad, this one's bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to know where we stood on the two programs. So PCI is basically dead then.
Well, communities are still doing it. Akron's still doing it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, we're not doing it as a region-wide collaboration thing anymore because it's just kind of not moving.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess we will move on to the old business, which is the CIC bylaws discussion. Three of the four of you know what's been going on. So I believe I gave all of you a handout, or there is a handout over there, of the proposed draft of the new mission statement. And the
it looks
three
like
of
this.
You, yes. The three of you signed off on it. So
yeah.
we were hoping tonight to get approval from all of CIC so that we could accept this, adopt this as our new CIC mission statement and move on to the bylaws. So why don't you take a moment to read it over?
They're in here?
They weren't in the folder.
Just this handout.
Oh,
the one you had in your hand.
It's just a mission statement. It's not the whole
You got it right there.
Oh, this is the only thing that's been discussed.
That's it.
Right now, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Boil it down to a sentence.
More than minutes than this.
So, yeah. We've approved the mission statement. The next step is to move on to the actual bylaws,
right.
Which we will schedule a meeting for that shortly. Is there any time that you guys are looking in particular? We've been doing, Thursdays?
Thursday, 5:30 at Panera up there.
Yeah. Is that working? Should we continue a Thursday? And if so, when do you guys want to do it?
We can't do it. No, I can't. It's not physically possible. I have 7 o'clock commitments in Cam on Thursdays.
Oh, okay. So not Thursdays.
If there's a better day.
Are Wednesdays okay?
I mean, I've just got to leave by like 6:15, so it only gives us 45 minutes.
You know what? Are Wednesdays okay? We won't hold everybody up for this, and we can...
Yeah, well, Wednesday is fine.
Okay, we'll email and try to
find out the time then.
So we'll
I can do any time.
Wednesday, all right. So that's the next step. I'll get an email out to you guys so we can schedule that, and we will move on to the bylaws. But the one item of discussion was whether or not we should have membership. Do we need to have membership with regards to the bylaws, with regards to the Citizens Involvement Committee? Which I believe the three of you...
I don't understand the question.
We're debating whether or not we even have to have a membership clause in the bylaws. Currently, you have to attend 2 meetings before you're considered a member, a voting member of CIC. But we've been talking about changing CIC and trying to make it so that we actually have a better representation of the public, and trying to deformalize it, basically. So we've been discussing whether or not we even have to have a membership clause in there, if we can just invite the public and try to get information out to the public in a different way.
Sort of like a town hall meeting.
Is this open for discussion?
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, we're supposed to, there's certain things in here that we're, as it says motion required, I question if a motion is required from us other than that we've acknowledged it happening and that we have no objections, not a motion to approve. But for all practical purposes, there are very few things that need a, quote, membership.
Right.
And as long as the membership is limited to that, it precedes all of a sudden somebody having one opinion, getting 10 people to show up, which would be nice, to override the votes of the other people that have been here forever and ever. So I think there's a certain stability in having the membership. But at the same time, I understand, open it up. But there's very few things that we're really talking about a membership that needs to vote on.
Right. And I think that we're actually talking more about not really needing CIC to vote on things and to approve them up to policy. It's more about having a discussion and getting more people to attend, become informed, and participate, rather than the four of you making a motion and policy committee hearing about it.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
I totally object to the motion required on the minutes, or the agenda. That's a motion is required from us. No, it isn't.
Okay. I think we're all pretty much in agreement with that. I think there's even discussion of changing the way that we conduct meetings. Do you have something to say?
No. Go back to the Civil War, post-Civil War management. That's when Robert's Rule of Orders came in. Because town hall meetings would wind up with drunken brawls, somebody didn't like what you said, they'd punch you out. So Robert's Rules of Order were established, written up, so a chair could recognize each person, and everybody got a chance to speak, as opposed to, say, this guy here hogging the limelight all the time and shouting down anybody else that disagreed with him. It was just a management tool to make sure everybody got a chance to speak. That's why you see most organizations say, yeah, we'll do Robert's Rules of Orders, right? Which means you've got to have an agenda, you got to publish it, which we do, you got to invite people to come so they know what we're talking about. Okay. The motion thing, whether you've got to have enough people to approve it, have a quorum, we can delete that. You're right, we can delete that. You know, we can just say, we'll follow Robert's Rules of Orders for discussion, and we can just leave it at that. That way you don't get somebody in here with a torch and a pitchfork, you know, ready to burn the place down because he doesn't want to have his building destroyed or something like that. So
it's more important that everyone gets to talk and give their opinion than a formalized group votes yes or no. And that's the whole point of having a public discussion. There's 4 of us in here tonight. It wasn't so formal. Maybe we can get a handful of these other people out here who may not know anything about the technical part of all this, but there's something big and right happening in Maitland. South Main Street project or something. They want to say something about it.
Well, they want to know how it's going to affect them.
How it's going to affect them.
Right. We have people that have attended our CIC and then never come back because they can't participate. they can't participate until they've been to two meetings, and then they're able to vote.
But for participation is, I approve the minutes? I mean...
No, there's other things.
We're quite informal.
You think we're informal?
Yeah. I can interrupt any of you guys, and you're happy that we interrupt you.
Well, we don't want to change that. We definitely still want there to be open discussion. Does anyone else have any thoughts? Do we want to keep that in mind for our next meeting?
Make a note of it. Keep in mind. Bring it to the next meeting.
Okay.
We could amend Robert's rules and, you know, not have motions required, but still have a chair who would recognize speakers, so we keep it on a civil basis and everyone gets a chance to speak.
Any changes that we are suggesting we'll be bringing to the group. So nothing will be changed without bringing it to the entire CSC. The bylaws committee won't be making the changes without asking everyone else. Okay, then I guess we will move on to new business, which is the crash report, and Dave Pillay is going to present.
Am I blocking the screen? I can't even
talk. No, you're fine. Just short enough.
Okay, tonight I'm going to be presenting the 2011-2013 MS Crash Report. Tonight's presentation will cover the high crash sections and intersections. We'll review the ODOT safety program, and then we'll also look at bicycle and pedestrian safety. And that is something new that we started incorporating in our safety reports. A couple things that affect the number of crashes. First of all, something new started in 2013. Police departments do not have to report crashes where there's no injury and damage is less than $1,000. So that probably weeded out a few crashes. I've talked to police officers, and they said it's not a lot, but it's a few. And then MS recently annexed or added Milton Township and Rittman in Wayne County to the study area. And in this particular report, that was an additional 441 crashes. Crashes are what I consider stabilized. Since 2002, they've been decreasing, and then the last few years, they've kind of been stable. And in 2013, they did inch up just a tad. So that's still much better. That's still much better than 2002. Roughly 25% less crashes now than in 2002. When we get our data, the first thing we want to do is sort out the locations that qualify for sections. It's 10 crashes per mile per year, and a crash rate of 1 for intersections. It's 10 crashes in a 3-year period, and a minimum crash rate of 1. Then once we get all the locations sorted out that meet the minimum criteria, we have to rate them. And we rate them by a composite score. A composite score takes into consideration the number of crashes, the crash rate, and the severity index. And the composite score is a more balanced way of looking at a location. There were 124 highway sections that met the minimum criteria, and they are ranked by composite score in Table 1 in your handout. Briefly looking at the top five, four of the top five are locations that were also ranked this high last time. The new one to the top five list is the fifth one, Water Street in Kent. And I looked at those crashes, and what you have there is you have a lot more activity, and you have angle parking, and a lot of small minor crashes. And another thing, two of the top five locations have funding and or projects. There were 271 intersections that met the minimum criteria. Those are listed in Table 2 of the crash memo. The top five intersections were the same ones that were in the that were ranked in the top five last time. The only difference is the order moves around a little bit. And the good news with intersections is three of the top five locations have funding and or projects planned. Freeways are analyzed by ODOT. They do the whole state out of their Columbus central office. They divide the system into rural and urban. They look at 1/10 mile long sections, and they only consider the top 50 rural and top 50 urban locations statewide for further study. In our area, there were 8 locations that placed in the top 50 lists, and 4 of those were on the Ohio Turnpike, and the other 4 are shown on page 3 in the crash memo. And all of those non-turnpike locations were close to downtown Akron. The ODOT safety program is one of the best in the country. We're very fortunate to have this available to us. Ohio spends about $100 million on safety projects, and those funds can be used on any public road. It doesn't have to be functionally classified. Applications are due April 30th and September 30th, probably in the district office 6 weeks earlier. You can use the money for studies, design, right-of-way, and construction. And it's a really good deal because the local match is only 10%. Now we'll move into what I consider like the second part of our crash report, and that's looking at bicycle and pedestrian crashes. A couple things that are unique about these. They have a very high rate of injury, 80 and 88%. They're more random and spread out. It's harder to define exact locations, maybe corridors, but you don't have the 25 crashes at one intersection like you do with other ones. Many of them involve children, and most of the players in these crashes just aren't following the rules they should be. Bicycle crashes are up a little bit. They inched up a little bit in 2013. As you can see, over the years, they do tend to do that. They go up and down. There were 349 for the three-year period. 80% involved injuries, and unfortunately, there were 2 fatalities. The 11 to 20-year-old age group is the age that is involved in most of the crashes by far. And if you dive deeper into that age group, 12-year-olds are the ones that are involved in the most crashes. Most bicycle crashes happen at intersections, 68%. And if you break those down a little bit further and you look at what's happening at the intersections, you see that a lot of them are happening in crosswalks. For some reason, bikes tend to get hit in crosswalks a lot. And then the second big reason is bikes running a red light or a stop sign. And then further down the list, there's another type of crash where the bike actually hits a car in a crosswalk. So it seems like there's just a lot of these things occurring in crosswalks for some reason. I think it's because drivers just aren't expecting a bike there. This is a copy of a police report that I copied for a sample. This is probably the perfect storm. As you can see, the bicyclist is on the sidewalk. He's riding the wrong direction. He should be riding with traffic, but he's riding against traffic. The vehicle unit number two is pulling up to the main street to pull out, and you have one more obstacle or one more issue here. You have bushes that are causing visibility problems, and then you can see up in the description that once the car did hit the bike, then they left the scene without stopping, and all these things are pretty common when you start looking at the actual police reports. Pedestrian crashes are down a little bit from 2011, the last couple years, 2012 and 2013, have been very stable. Once again, a high percentage of injuries, 88%, and unfortunately with pedestrians, we had 13 fatalities. Once again, the 11 to 20-year-old age group is the group involved in most of the incidents. However, with these, it doesn't drop off quite as fast. The 21 to 30-year-old age group also had quite a few incidents, and I'm suspecting that it's college students driving that age group up a little bit. Pedestrian crashes happen almost evenly between intersections and mid-block. In other words, they just happen everywhere. The most common thing when you start looking at police reports is you see is people are just not paying attention. They're darting out into traffic. They're not waiting for signals to change, and these incidents are happening. If you look at the mid-block crashes and the intersection crashes, one interesting thing that I found was with the mid-block crashes, pedestrians were at fault most of the time, and with the intersection crashes, the vehicle was at fault most of the time. So I thought that was interesting. And then we have a few that happen at driveways, and those are kind of evenly split. So concluding, total crashes, injuries, and fatalities are stable. They were up slightly in 2013, but we're still doing much better than 10 years ago. All the locations are eligible for highway safety funding, and all these locations will be sorted by community on the website, so you can find the ones in your your community quickly. MATS has a policy of incorporating pedestrian and bike improvements in any highway project if possible, and we urge that you integrate those modes of transportation into your planning process. We have a website called Switching Gears, which offers information about bicycle safety and bicycle events. And finally, feel free to contact MS if you have any questions about any of these locations. And also, we're planning to offer some pre-engineering services. So if you have a location that you would like a crash diagram done on, or someone to visit to just kind of try to figure out what's happening there, we would be glad to come out and do some work for you, and that would be free of charge. So that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
I have a question in regards to the highway sections and intersections. The spreadsheet you had up there showed Route 59 from Howard to Broadway as having a future project to realign it. I was under the impression the Interbelt project was from Howard to Exchange. Is that a separate project?
Okay, let me go back to it. Was it sections or intersections? Sections?
Both. The MLK, number one?
Yes.
Rerouting. Are they planning on rerouting from Market to Broadway as well as the expressway portion?
The reroute, the reason a lot of these crashes are happening is that's the curve that negotiate when the freeway ends, and the intersection there is also the first intersection you encounter once the freeway ends. What we're thinking the rerouting will do is it will it'll slow traffic down, and it'll create a safer transition into the from a freeway to a street.
Okay, so when the freeway itself is removed ahead of it, mm-hmm. the rest of it will be safer because of the slower traffic.
Yeah, that's...
So that's just... Yeah. It's not necessarily going to be rerouted all the way to North Broadway.
No, that's a street.
Okay.
Yeah, so the hope is that that will create a safer highway, transition zone between the freeway and the Perkins Street.
Okay. The West Exchange Street project plan, is that going to be one of the conversions from one-way to two-directional traffic, or is that...
Actually, they looked at, I think they studied that option and decided not to go with it.
Oh, okay.
So I believe those will stay one-way, but they're planning to kind of reconfigure the lanes a little bit. But I think they did study the two-way option and decided not to do it.
Okay, answers my question.
I was really impressed with the bike thing. I've never seen that before, and I like what was presented. I just have, because of the age groups, I would almost suggest 10 to 16, because at that point in time there's, quote, public education on driving. The 7 to 23, that's basically, hey, you're college kids. And then 24 to 40, you know, you're young yuppies and whatever. But I think that not going as a group of 10, but this would be, if you see, obviously, a greater increase in one area, these are more specific areas that, I mean, they're going to, you can focus your instructions to the college people. Well, but if we know 20 to 30, who are you going to, you know, who are you focusing these statistics to? There's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it for the learning of road rules versus those that are young at it and in college, and then the young kids out there, they're in the beginning of their life. I just think those three age groups would be more appropriate than what you've done.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
It's only gut feeling.
We actually have on here that a motion is requested. I'm going to follow the agenda today. If we're going to make changes, we can change that later, but we should probably follow our rules for today. Mm-hmm. I'll entertain a motion. I'm approving Dave's... All right. Baker?
I'll second you.
And that allows us to move on. Dave is going to present this to policy next week, and hopefully they will also approve it. And then you'll see it on our website. Okay, so we'll move on to the resolutions. There's four of them, attachment 6A, 6B, 6C, and 6D. Not sure how you guys want to go about looking at this, but a motion is required on all of them.
I'd like to make a motion for all four of these that the committee has reviewed all these and has no objections, that they are all they pass all the requirements of public involvement and all the other things that they say in their relationship to society improvements, air quality.
Perfect. We have a motion.
To approve all four.
Second.
All right. Any is that what's next? Discussion? On it? Can we approve it?
Did everybody read the minutes?
Everybody should have gotten the email that I sent in on this stuff. My question was on slide repair. Due to the expected rainfall, is AMATS making the technical advisory committee aware of increased rainfall areas resulting in more slides? And would they be able to go out and assess embankments that are going to fail in the future, rather than waiting for them to fail
take action now. Had a question on the Hiram job, and they're actually moving money 1 year sooner to get into the sidewalk area, so that was answered to me. And I would explain that one building down here on 76.
Micropoise.
Yeah, they're going to tear down this old building here. Part of the cyberlink. This is north, this is south. This is all that area that's tore up. Here's Maslin Road on the side, if anybody remembers where Maslin Road is out there on East Market. And it's part of the cyberlink job, and they're going to want it done. They're going to throw some money in. I guess we're going to throw some money in. So that answered my question on that one for these CMAP funding programs.
And that was for the Englewood bridling, correct? Micropoise.
Yeah, Englewood's right there on the south side. Yeah, and it's going to tear out that area there. So open up the lane for it.
All right, any further discussion?
Well, am I assuming the part of the question there is right now there's a planning schedule, you know, some kind of 3-year lead time on some of these projects. Is there going? Is there any possibility of, if I'm understanding you right, an emergency issue here? Obviously, most of the projects are now going to keep our infrastructure instead of increasing it. But what do we do with a year? You know, something happens. There's no chance to come to AMATS for, you know, approval because it's such a long process. Is that what you were asking there about the slides?
Well, you obviously have to repair the slide to keep the road up.
But is there provision for AMATS to have an emergency feature that you've never really had before? Now, you've always been with long planning periods.
Yeah, the way that works on those projects, especially mainly those are ODOT type projects, they have an emergency. They call them, there's two types of emergency funds. Some are emergency funds, they'll call them that for these slide repairs. They're not emergency as in it happened today and they need that money tomorrow. There's different kind of emergency funds that takes care of stuff like that. But in the TIP, because it's federal money, we have to follow certain procedures. It has to come to this committee for approval. But in the TIP, there's stuff called line items that they don't have to go. They're pre-approved by the feds. But they don't have to go through this whole process. They kind of do when we develop a new TIP and you approve that new TIP. Well, in that TIP is those line items, and you approve saying if they need these monies for emergency slide repairs, it's there available. You don't have to go to an individual meeting like this to get it approved. They're called line items, and there's a whole list of them if you look in the TIP, and that falls under one of these that you wouldn't, it technically doesn't have to come to this committee, but if you know about it more in advance, we'll still bring it to the committee for approval. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question. It's kind of convoluted, but that's the way.
I guess I never read it that way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he presented it, and then your question.
Yeah.
It's
I haven't read it.
It didn't spell that out in this amendment or anything, but if I had a TIP here, I could show you where these line items are. So.
Thank you, Victor.
I have my own discussion on the four items together that we're considering here.
What was that?
Didn't he move to put all these together?
Yep, we actually had a first and a second.
And a second, and now you have discussion.
Mm-hmm. Is there any more discussion?
There you go.
Okay, all in favor?
Yep,
come on. Woohoo! Any opposed? All right, we're moving on. Okay, next is other business, formation of the 2015 nominating committee. So we need two volunteers to... I don't know how you want to go about it, but two people, or it can't be us, to volunteer to pick a chairman and a vice chair. We haven't had a vice chair. Yeah, we haven't had it. Well, we could use it tonight.
Yeah.
Unless we do away with Robert's rules, but again, we don't know. That's the difficult part for me. But anyways, we need two people to volunteer to come up with a nomination for a chairman.
Can I ask what status for present chairman?
It's something. Oh, the status? I don't know.
Are you not sick?
It didn't show. It didn't show.
I have.
I just
thought
like him. Yeah. He just never doesn't show.
Right.
I don't know. It's out of character for sure.
He's probably due from the hospital.
I hope not. I haven't heard a thing.
Once last year, too. He was in the hospital or something.
Yeah. We just nominated him in last year.
Yeah.
He's doing such a good job. We'll keep him.
Right. Well, should we table this? Well, we kind of need to come up with.
Why don't we four form a nominating committee and then right now say that he's going to be the chair of it?
You can't do that without us. That's not fair.
It's called railroading as far as transportation.
Well, I'll be on the nominating
committee. All right, me too. All right, two of us.
All right.
Two former military people? I don't know if that's good.
Well, we're volunteers.
Okay, we've got Phil Mackey.
I was told you
volunteer early. Chairman? Vice chairman.
So then, at our next meeting, which is scheduled December 11th, hopefully we'll be able to, you guys will give us your nomination, right. You can vote on it, and move on so that next year we have a chairman as well.
All right.
So that is all I've got. Does anyone else have anything else that we need to discuss?
There's no meeting in October or November.
Correct. Next meeting is December 11th.
And we have the annual meeting in October.
October 17th, yes.
I got to check to get somebody up. I couldn't sign up. I clicked on the thing and couldn't sign up. She said, bring a check to the meeting. Give it to you guys, and you will take it back.
Oh, really? Someone
we'll take it to Liz.
Okay.
Not email me. Whoever's doing that email trying to set it up. All I got with that YouTube video is a live brother allowed to do that.
She got one of the bad emails.
Check for you guys to take back.
Okay, we'll take it back. If anyone else wants to do it, I think the most recent email she sent out works, but if you don't even want to try her email, if you go to our homepage of our website.
She already signed me up for the mail. I just got an email.
Okay, but anyone else, if you go to the homepage of our website, there's a big old, it's a save the date of our annual meeting, right on the front, a picture of the speakers. It's a pretty picture. Of many pictures, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you click on that, it will take you to the annual meeting page, and at the bottom of that is the register here. There's also a line in the body of the homepage that says if you want to register for the annual meeting, click here. It takes you directly to the registration page. Just throwing that out there. All right. So, with that,
I move we adjourn.
Sorry.
All right.
All right. And we're done.